Welcome to the fifth episode of the Nonstop Podcast with Pooja. And with me, I have Lissy, the very splendid Lissy, a very young rugby champion, a social media marketer, to say the least. And I will let you introduce yourself, Lissy. Who are you and why with me?
Okay. Yeah, I'm Lissy. I play rugby and I'm also a social media marketer. And as to the question, why am I with you today?
Yeah.
Obviously, we met last night.
Yeah, yeah.
At a Women's Connector event.
Yeah.
And then you invited me here.
Yes. So
today.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to tell you why I invited her here today, because I thought she's one of those women that actually truly moved me. And I wanted her to tell this little story. And so Lissy has been into rugby. For how long, Lissy? And how did you get into the sport?
Well, to be fair, it was through family. So my little brother played, and then my brother's team, club started a women's team, like a girls team at the time. And then my sister wanted to join. But I was like, I wasn't really keen myself. She really wanted to do it, and I was like, no way. I've watched rugby, I've seen it, and I've seen what they do, I'm not involved, I don't want that. But I wanted to join cadets.
Yeah.
And so I said, I'll come to rugby with you if you do cadets with me.
Yeah.
And then, I just never looked back. Years later, we all quit cadets and carried on with rugby. So I guess she was right.
Yeah, I think that's incredible. I think, everybody starts a sport with like an accident. And most of us here, have tried to be good at it, but some of them are good at it. Mm-hmm. And you're one of them that are good at it. So so when did you start, and what are the leagues that have you played? Where have you traveled? I mean, let us know a little bit on that.
So I started, it's coming up to, I think 9 years, but it's been on and off. So I played for the local club and then ended up playing for county. Then I got into like the divisional thing and a national setup under 18s. Then kind of played women's rugby in, like, I was playing up, so I was 17 and playing up into the women's leagues. Played at Richmond. Then COVID happened, so I stopped playing for a bit. And to be fair, I did have injuries in and out of this as well. But yeah, post-COVID, I wasn't sure I was going to go back, because I just wasn't, I was at uni as well, and, I just wasn't sure. So I started actually doing a rugby magazine, because I was still into the sport, but I wasn't sure if I was going to play. So I started doing a rugby magazine where I'd interview other people and promote women's rugby that way. And then actually through doing that, I was like, oh, maybe I should go back. So I ended up going back and playing in France for a season of Sevenay, and then I came back. Joined Saracens and then London Irish, and then from London Irish I got scouted for a professional sevens team, which I currently am with now, which is cool.
Okay, that sounds so incredible. Like, I'm like, you're like, yeah, I've done this and that, and I'm pretty much a little pro. So I mean, like, I come from a bar world where we not know what rugby is, but I mean, we are quite ignorant that way, because we have such a big sport in the name of cricket, mm-hmm. which is very formidable, and we love it. So I'm sure rugby is a huge, huge deal of a sport in this side of the world, in the West. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have to explain rugby to dummies, or rugby to young girls who are probably listening to this, mm-hmm. or to some rugby moms who are listening to this, how would you describe the sport? What would you say is, okay, it doesn't matter whether you understand it or not, but you need to know these lingos in rugby when you're going and watching it. What are these lingos?
Ooh.
I put you under the bus.
Yeah, this is a tough one. Just making rugby simple.
Yeah.
You start with the ball in the middle.
Yeah.
You've got two teams.
Yeah.
And both of them want to get the ball.
Yeah.
To the opposite side of the pitch.
Yeah.
So one team is trying to get it to the left, the other team is trying to get it to the right.
Yeah.
And the person that gets it to the opposite side the most amount of times wins.
Okay, and how many times do you typically, do you have a time cap to play this? And...
Oh yeah, you have 80 minutes to play.
Yeah.
And you stop each other from scoring by tackling each other to the ground.
Okay. Okay, that sounds very similar to a sport that I've played, Ultimate Frisbee, but I'm sure it's twice as hard. So
can you tackle an Ultimate Frisbee?
I think we can defend, but it's a no-contact sport again. But is rugby a contact sport?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, there's different variations. You can play touch or tag rugby, so you don't have to tackle, but...
Yeah.
I tackle.
You tackle, yeah. So the next question is, which position do you play in rugby?
So I play, strike prop. So I don't know what that would mean to someone that doesn't... rugby. So in sevens there's three forward players and then there's four backs.
Yeah.
And so I'm one of the forwards generally. And sometimes I'll be a back.
Okay. Alright. So, yeah. Okay, so you're a forward. So I think I pretty much resonate that with football terms and
yeah.
I'm sure you're quite evident, yeah, in the game. So in terms of having picked it up, what have some of the main challenges been? You have been raised in London most of your life. You're pretty young and you went a uni year, mm-hmm. I assume. And what are some of the main challenges that you feel you have faced? Have you faced some kind of obvious funding issues? Do you think it's an expensive sport? Do you feel that it's looked after enough in this country? What do you feel on those aspects?
I think it's not particularly expensive as sports go. Because I think, the way I see sports, I see them there's essentially two types. There's the mass market sports, which are quite accessible, and then there's more premium sports that aren't. And generally, team sports are more mass market, and individual sports would generally be more premium, just by the economics. So imagine if you have a coach that wants to earn, say, $200 an hour. If you're only coaching one person, that $200 has to come from one. But if you're coaching 30, that $200 is split into 30. So team sports are generally more accessible just because there's more of you, so the coach can split the costs. I think funding, there's a lack of funding in women's rugby compared to the men's rugby, because it's just behind. It's only been professional. It's been professional for a short amount of time, and even men's rugby has only been professional since 1995, compared to football, which has been professional since the early 1900s. So it's had almost 100 years. It's had 100 years kind of a head start on rugby.
Yeah.
So rugby in general is quite a young professional sport. I think with women, you'll see a lot of women have to pay for. A lot of their own expenses for you know kit and travelling, whereas I see the men tend to get things paid for. I mean, the team that I'm with is really good. They cover everything. So if you're going to travel abroad or whatever, obviously to pay for your flights, pay for accommodation, they look after you. But that's quite rare. I don't see another sevens team that does that at all in the UK for women, even mm-hmm. for the men, actually.
Okay, but it is one of the largely viewed sports here, right? I assume that you have a lot of viewership and a lot of people are watching it. Because, I live by Chelsea and every time I pass by, everyone's yeah. And I'm okay, what's happening? So it is, what do you think in terms of viewership? Do you think rugby gets a fair enough viewership?
I think it's quite high. Obviously, football's the most watched sport.
Yeah.
In Chelsea specifically.
Yeah.
And in South West London.
Yeah.
Is quite a big hub for rugby.
Yeah.
So South West London is you've got Twickenham. So South West London is really big for rugby. So that's slightly skewed. But in general, it's not as big as it could be, in my opinion. It's not as big as it could be. I think globally we've got a lot of participation. And obviously in the north of the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere, South Africa and the Pacific Islands and stuff like that, Australia. But I think it could be bigger. I think, for example, it could be bigger in the US or bigger in Canada. It could grow even more. And even across Europe, it's not as popular as football. In Germany, it's not as big. The Netherlands is not as big. Croatia and all these other places, it's not as big as football.
Yeah. And why do you think so? Do you think it's because it's a more physical sport? In terms of women not trying to pick it up. Do you think one of the formidable reasons could be that, it's far more intimidating to put yourself out there? I'm sure you had your first instance, as a little girl.
I didn't want to.
I'm sure you would have never forgotten when you were first pushed to the ground and hammered. And how did you feel? Do you remember that? Do you recall when was the first time that you did feel or you don't remember the adrenaline?
Oh my goodness, I can't remember tackling for the first time, because I started doing touch initially. It was non-contact. and then it was later that we did tackling, but I can't remember the first time I tackled. But I did do jiu-jitsu before rugby, so I did jiu-jitsu and athletics, so I was quite used to A, speed, but then also B, physicality. But despite the fact that I had done jiu-jitsu, I still was hesitant to try rugby because rugby just seemed completely out of the question. It just seemed completely crazy.
yeah.
But to your question about why people don't pick it up, to your question about why more people don't pick it up, I just think it's not marketed as effectively as it could be. It's not marketed in a way that's fun and accessible. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why I started doing content with rugby. And that's kind of why I started doing the type of content that I was doing, because I was trying to make rugby fun and accessible. Like, how could someone that has no clue about rugby watch a video with the rugby ball in it and still gain value from it, still be entertained or still learn something? So I think that's the key, because there are, like you said, there are loads of these rugby terms that then exclude a lot of people and stop it from growing. Whereas football, it seems like anyone can look at the sport and pick it up straight away.
Yeah.
I think rugby could be the same in terms of, like, when you look at parks as well, those are kids always playing football in a park, they'll set up a game. And you don't see that with rugby, but it's very, in the UK anyway, you don't see that with rugby in the UK, and it's really possible. So I play around with rugby ball a lot in the park, and every time I do, someone always comes, oh, what's a girl like you playing rugby? Or what's a girl like you playing around with rugby ball? But it's funny, whenever I go out and play by myself, I always end up playing with someone just ends up coming in and joining. So it's really funny.
Yeah, I think it's incredible to, you know, to learn about a sport and also understand why and how it's not gotten where it's gotten.
Mm.
I mean, many sports of today's time, I mean, I'm sure, you know, a lot of people have a misconception about the fact that golf is for or was for elitist.
Mm.
And now a lot more people are picking it up because, you know, it's trying to become far more accessible.
Mm.
I even saw a recent, I think, a documentary on the fact that, you know, a lot of golf courses was laid on Africa, you know, to just get kids to pick it up because, you know, like we already know, a lot of African athletes are extremely good at track and field and in many other sports, and like, and it just kind of makes it more, if any sport is made more accessible to, you know, many developing parts of the world, and like, not just like, I mean, UK is way more privileged, we don't just have one good sport here, we have 10. You know, I mean, there's one for every liking, from horse riding to rugby to football to cricket, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it's also kind of like fascinating to know that women are playing tougher sports, and like, women of today are kind of like, we're kind of like, you know, getting away from like the typecast or like, you know, the conventional aspect of, you know, pick something that's more elegant or pick something that's more comfortable in your own skin, and you know, you're out there doing something that's, you know, on a pay parity with men and all of that. Just also trying to understand, you know, like, because you've been in sports all your life, and like, you kind of enjoy, you know, the fulfillment of like being on the field and sweating on the field and like getting out there. I also want to know what goes behind the preparation, because I'm sure people listening to it, people who want to take up a sport, you know, who can think that, you know, they can be a pro athlete, or you have about like 20,000 followers on your socials, you know, and I'm sure you have built it very organically, and it was not over many years, it's just probably in the recent past, because you pivoted to also taking rugby as not just your sport, but also kind of like, you saw that there is potential for it to grow and for people to know about it, and if people, you know, kind of like pick up interest in it, and then it's not just a way of life for people who are in rugby, but people are also, you know, trying to get into the sport. So let us know what goes behind it, what physically challenging, what's your fitness routine, how many times do you work out a week, what kind of workouts do you do, because I mean, as a petite girl myself, and having tried many sports, I'm not really particularly good, you know, at some, you know, some level of sport, of course, like I picked up law, and like, I've always wondered, you know, what do pro athletes do, because I feel like, if you have to do well on the field, you need to train right.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean for you to train right? Or are you one of those people who are just naturally blessed with, you know, I'm putting in the less inputs and then the skill plays a larger part?
Ooh, actually, you know what? I think it's such a danger to be like, oh, I'm naturally good at this.
Yeah.
Because it stops you from working as hard. And it's like, I think it's like the hare and the tortoise, right? The hare is a naturally good person that said, yeah, I'm good. And they might even take a break. But then the tortoise that's not naturally good slowly works and works and works. And whilst the hare's sleeping, gets to the finish line. Because I was someone where I was like, oh yeah, I'm naturally fast, so I don't need to train, or I'm naturally this, so I don't need... But then, eventually, they, you know, they say hard work beats talent if talent doesn't work hard. So I think you have to do both. And it's something that I'm like, I've had to like realize over time. But yeah, in terms of my current routine, I'm actually switching off. So I'm usually in the gym 5 times a week, but I'm gonna be in the gym, do weights less, and incorporate more sprinting. So it will be Tuesday, Wednesday, Sunday weights. Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday weights, and then sprinting on Wednesdays and Fridays. But obviously we play at the weekend, so. But yeah, that's what I'm going to be incorporating. And then just doing handling regularly, like every day. So, that's kind of my routine. I was in the gym this morning, I did legs.
So you spend like a good like 3-4 hours a day like training either on like your skills in terms of the sport, or you're in the gym doing your routine in
like
terms
weight,
of weights.
Like weights.
Yeah. And what do you think, because I'm sure like for every sport there is different kind of training that goes into, you know, like you say, sprinting is very important, and what kind of weight training goes into it? Is it like the general you know, a gym training where you focus on your glutes, you focus on your you're gonna focus on kind of like your, you know, your calf and like your upper body, because I'm pretty sure rugby is a more prominent upper body sport as well, as much as it is a lower body. Yeah.
I think 15th rugby is a lot more upper body based. You have, just look at the players and you kind of see the trends of like 15th players generally have really strong upper bodies.
Yeah.
The 7th players, it's a mix. Some have good strong upper bodies, but they also have strong legs because you're sprinting constantly, which is why I realised I need to incorporate more sprints into my training, because you need to be constantly sprinting. And in terms of the weight training, it's really funny because I started training with bodybuilders for a bit. And so I was like doing that whole, you know, glutes this day, hamstrings this day, quads this day. But that's really bad for your athleticism.
Yeah.
I remember doing like a fitness test after training with bodybuilders for ages, and I couldn't jump. Like there was just no air.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, this has to stop.
Yeah.
So you have to incorporate kind of athletic training as well, so the jumps and bounds and all that stuff. But that's really cool. That kind of goes well with sprint training. So yeah, it's really... That's really interesting. But I do kind of like both, because I used to not rate bodybuilders at all, because I thought it was vain and pointless, just to train to lose in the mirror. But when I started to spend time with bodybuilders, I realised that they were quite disciplined. They kept their routines.
Yeah.
Their diet was on point. They ate better than most athletes that I'd seen. Obviously, sometimes it can be a bit extreme when it comes to going on the stage. They're eating a tiny amount. But in general... they eat very well, and they meal prep everything, and so I realised there was actually a lot that I could learn from them. I think you can always learn from people, and that took like before meeting loads of bodybuilders, having not like rated it before, was really powerful for me, because then it shows that you can change your mind and you can learn new things from anyone.
Yeah, I mean, that comes like also with another question, like what's your relationship with food? Like, I mean, I'm sure, you know, like as an athlete, you know, you're forced to eat well, and like you're forced to have, you know, your protein intake and all this regular jazz. But what's your relationship with food? Like, what do you think should be an ideal thing? Do you think everybody should have a weighing scale where they weigh their food? Are you really into the math like that? Or are you somebody who thinks that, okay, you know, as long as I get in my protein, I'm fine. Like, how disciplined are you with the food?
Ooh, yeah, I haven't gotten the scales out for food yet.
Yeah.
that's not been me.
Yeah.
In general, I don't count calories, but I just focus on protein. So at the moment, I'm having 100 grams of protein a day, and that's through shakes and food. So that's it really. I'll make sure to eat as much fruit and vegetables as possible, whether it's food juice or having it with a meal or having fruit as a snack. But yeah, I'm pretty, I don't know, my relationship with food is pretty neutral. I think some of it's really tasty, and some of it I just eat just to get the nutrients that I need.
And yeah, well, we have to also tackle the final part of this whole aspect of being a sports woman, which is the mental strength, right? Like, I mean, what's your relationship? How do you, I mean, because you've been playing the sports since you were a kid. I'm sure when you were a kid, you know, winning something meant nothing when you left the field. You were extremely happy. And I'm sure when you went home, you were like, yeah, I mean, I'm cool, I won it. But you don't think about the win. You don't, like, reflect on it as much. Because now growing up, you know, I'm sure you have video analysts and you have, like, you kind of watch yourself a lot. You're way more harder on yourself. And you yourself, you're a founder of a social media company, a startup. And so, I mean, there's a, I mean, I don't know at what level, you know, you kind of get the people watching you, but I'm sure even if it's a very niche community, it still affects you a lot, you know, on days that you don't play. And like, and just in general, like, how do you cope up with mental strength? Because you're also a coach, right?
I was a coach, as I told you last night. I actually coached for the first time on Sunday, just to help out, just to help out the, like, the owner of the team. So it's like, that was insane. But to be fair, I really did have a lot of fun. And my team that I coached won the tournament, and that felt just as good as if I'd played. I felt slightly better. I don't know why. There's something, I don't know, there's something about, like, coaching younger people, or helping, especially younger people, because I guess helping them in a way that you wish you'd had when you were a bit younger. You know. Because there was never really any, like, older sports person around me when I was younger. And I think it would have helped for a lot of stuff.
So, like, in terms of your mental strength, where do you think you drew that from? I mean, what is the biggest drawbacks you've had? I'm sure it would come in terms of injury, or if it would have come in terms of, like, you know, a play on field. Have you had a point in time where in your... you know, your career as an athlete, you just felt like, okay, now I'm giving up. You know, like, it's been really hard. Like, it, was there a time?
There's been multiple. Like I said, in terms of injuries, I was gonna, like, there was injuries and stuff from when I was younger, and then being injured was not good because, like, I couldn't even watch certain games because, oh, you know, I can't play. And obviously COVID was bad because as someone with a lot of energy, I really did miss playing sports and being active. It was quite frustrating. And I think everyone can connect with that. And then kind of coming back and feeling like, okay, like, where do you want this to go? Because whereas with a lot of other sports that are established and have been established kind of professionally, If you decide, okay, I want to be the best sprinter in the world, and then just fully commit yourself to that, there's already clear paths of what the best sprinters in the world look like, and what kind of lifestyle they live, and all this kind of stuff. But where rugby, especially women's rugby, is so new, coming up, there was no idea of what it would look like. Like, even if you put all of your energy into this thing, like, what would your lifestyle look like? And I think that was really not confusing but tough, because then when you're making decisions about whether to go to uni or to take, because I got offered a scholarship to play rugby in America, like, this university, you know, offer everything to go and play, but then you're thinking, then you're factoring in what does the end look like? Because if you're doing all of this, where is it going to go? Because there's no blueprint. It was changing so quickly. Even now, women's rugby is changing so quickly. It could look completely different in 3 years' time, 5 years' time, in 10 years' time. Who knows? So I think that's the most interesting thing about women's rugby, where it is right now. Because if you decided to pick up any other, like most other sports, you can kind of know, okay, This is what it looks like. But with women's rugby, you don't know.
I think that's in many you know, upcoming sports, right? Like, you do not find a kind of an idol to look up to, a kind of like, you know, somebody that you, I mean, not even in terms of like ethnicity or not even in terms of like relatability, but just in terms of like, okay, give me 10 names, you know, who I can relate to, you know, who I can make, like, because sports is also a very like suspectable area of life where there is still not a lot of funding involved. There is still a lot of like, it, a lot of it depends on the viewership, you know, on how well it's marketed, and today's time when there's so much of competition in terms of like just like, you know, different online platforms, different like viewing like, you know, these online streams, and then there is like the regular television, and where does your sports stand, you know, how far can you be reached? I mean, that brings me to my next question. So who was your idol? Like, who did you look up to? Did you have any kind of references, you know?
Oh, of course. In terms of, like, top rugby players, like, growing up, there were loads of, I knew loads of top women's rugby players. But my point was, though, in terms of, when I looked at the best rugby players in the world versus the best other athletes in the world, it was just a whole other universe. It's like... but I think that's changing so much now. So like, for example, you know, the stadiums are starting to fill out, and you know, it's being streamed on TV, and that's incredible. So I think that's really good, to just to get more exposure to the sport, because I just think more people should be in it. It's really fun, and teaches you good values, and you meet some great people. So
So who was your superhero?
So I was gonna say the people that I really liked. In terms of just rugby players or everyone?
Yeah, somebody you just like, I mean, one rugby player, and then one player, I mean, one anybody that you kind of like reference.
Okay. Who did I like? I used to really like, I liked Vicky Fleetwood, Portia Woodman. I don't know if these names mean anything to you. Who else? Maggie Alfonsi. And in general, other athletes, I really like Dina Asher-Smith, Serena Williams. Who else do I like?
And most of them are from the States or from United Kingdom, yeah? And who's your top player from the UK? Like, who's your...
Top rugby player?
Yeah, top rugby player.
So, to be fair, those two... I mentioned two. So, Maggie Alfonsi and Vicky Fleetwood are both British... all English rugby players.
And which teams are they from? For somebody who's never played rugby before, to just get into rugby.
So they both played for England.
They played for England. Okay, okay. And do you ever have aspirations of playing for England? I'm sure everybody, you know, has the common goal. You want to wear your, you know, your country's jersey and listen to the national anthem, and then, you know, all those goosebumps and everything. So do you intend to do that someday, or is that on your charts?
I think it's... Oh, that's an interesting one. I mean, to be fair, it would be different, because I'm more of a fan of sevens than 15s. And so sevens, you can't actually play for England anymore. It would have to be GB, because that's just the way that it's structured.
Yeah.
But, you know, in terms of the rugby, like, I just want to obviously go as far as I can go with it. And enjoy it too.
Yeah, it's very important, right? To truly enjoy what you're doing, and how it all goes, and what kind of feeling you bring back home. So yeah, final questions about rugby. So tell us your favorite tournament, and when was that feeling when you lifted a cup, or when you were recognized, where you felt like, okay, now rugby is for me, and I am for rugby.
Ooh, okay. To be fair, more recently, it was last year. We played in Scotland and we won the tournament. Sorry, last year we were playing and it was the first time that they'd allowed. Last year we were playing in Scotland in a tournament called Melrose. I can't speak. Last year we were playing in a tournament in Melrose in Scotland. It was the first time that they'd actually allowed women to play in that tournament.
Yeah.
In history, and it's been going for, you know, literally decades. So.
Yeah.
We were allowed to play for the first time, and we'd gotten into the final of that tournament, and I hadn't scored at the time, and normally I would have just been scoring loads and loads and loads. And the coach kind of came to me and said, "Lizzie, you haven't scored yet." I was like, no, I haven't. He was like, you need to score in the final, I need to score.
Yeah.
Like, okay. And then within like 30 seconds, I'd score in that the game, and then
yeah.
I'd scored again. And literally, they used one of my highlights for the documentary that they made about that tournament.
Oh, wow, that's incredible. So what is the tournament and what's the documentary? To anybody who's listening.
It's on BBC, it was so funny.
It's on BBC, Lizzie is on BBC. Okay, that's great.
Who was the coach? I'd say I would definitely think it was like one of those moments where like the coach knew what to say to me specifically to just...
Yeah, to switch you on.
Yeah, to flick it on.
Yeah.
Because I think, to be fair, also, I was speaking to someone about this recently, another player, one of the male players, because we've got male and female side, and he was like, oh, do you ever get, like, scared?
Yeah.
Do you ever get, like, adrenaline in rugby? I'm like, to be fair, not really anymore.
Yeah.
Which is kind of bad.
Yeah.
Because I used to, you know, feel like, oh, my God, whoo. But, yeah, not really. And I think sometimes you probably do need, like, a...
Yeah, someone to just be like...
Just spark it.
Yeah.
Because I'm always probably too calm. I'm like, it's another game.
So where else have you travelled? Like, have you been outside country for tournaments?
Well, in general, rugby, rugby, so far, I've played in France and lived in France, playing for a French team. I also played in France for another British team here. And then, in terms of this current team I'm with, we've played in Spain, we've played in Grenada in the Caribbean, played in where else did we go? We've gone to play, obviously, you know, Scotland and everything. I played in Amsterdam last year with another team. Where else have I been? And this summer we should be in Portugal, Denmark, the Netherlands, hopefully Dubai and Spain again.
Well, I mean, that's great. Like, I mean, that's already that you're putting rugby and yourself on the map. So that's incredible. But with that, we have to wrap up the rugby topic, because you are much more than rugby. You are a boss woman.
Oh,
you're
gosh.
The go-get girl as well. You do have a side to that. And I must say to the viewers, they always say you can never ask the woman age, you never say the woman age. But Lizzie, my friend here, is 23 and she has her own company. And it's not just anything, it came out of your pure passion and your wisdom of wanting to put rugby on the map.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, how did you start this company and what motivated you and what do you do?
So we're talking about Ruckstars?
Both. You have Ruckstars and then you have the social media company.
Oh yeah, the social media, okay. To be fair, obviously I just got into social media more to promote rugby. And, you know, initially, as I said earlier, I was just interviewing other people in rugby and I would never show my face ever because I just wasn't into it. But I'd interview people, put up their videos, repost other people's videos of them playing. I'd write articles about others and do match reviews, and I had someone else writing for me as well, and that was, you know, that was just ticking along. It was nice, I was getting some good traction within the community. And then someone said to me that usually when you have a brand, if there's a face, it will grow quicker. So obviously the brand was Ruckstar Magazine, and ideally I wanted to have like a streaming app for women's rugby because there was a lack of streaming. And then, you know, streaming app, magazine, you know, like a whole ecosystem. So when they said put a face on it, so that was going to be Ruckstar. So I made Ruckstar Lizzie as an account just to promote rugby in general and see what I could do this similar thing. And then obviously it kind of blew up and started to work with these brands. They got all these opportunities and like I also like just realized it could help people. So people would like DM me or saying, oh, my daughter wants to get into rugby. What do you think I should do, or what's the, you know, like people just ask me these kind of questions.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, cool. Like I realized it's actually reaching people. Or someone said, oh, I'm going to start rugby now because I've seen these videos and they're really funny. I'm like, okay, cool. Like this is good. And then I just realized I liked the social media aspect of it as well. I really like systems, so I like when things just make sense. So I started doing some consulting as well. And I worked with on the consulting side. I've done with a range of different businesses, like a dating app and supplement company. Worked with dentists and stuff. But I think it's best to work with people that like you align with. So I think, for example, the supplement company work, I actually made the most difference to, because I think it aligned with what I was doing anyway.
Yeah.
So I think in future, that's what I would say for myself and for others as well.
Yeah.
But I think that's something I had to learn.
You need to align yourself with what you like. And
And then I also realised I really like writing. Well, so I've always really liked writing. I've kept a journal since I was like 11. And then so through the social media, I also started doing ghostwriting as well.
Oh, wow.
So that... that's pretty fun. I really like ghostwriting. So like even like some of my friends have now become clients. So they're ghostwriting their profiles and things. And my friend said to me, like, you know what, you really captured my voice. I was like, well, it's you, you said it. She was like, yeah, but you made it sound good.
Yeah, it's very convincible, yeah. Because
obviously
we'll
just have a conversation like this. And I think that's good for a LinkedIn post. And I'll write a post based on something that they've just said while we're having dinner.
Yeah.
And she'd be like, oh my god, I forgot I even said that.
yeah, that's great,
So I really like, to be fair, I really like writing as well. So I think it's always trying to like put all your interests into something. You know, and then go and lean into your passion, if you will. Even though I feel like the word passion is so overused.
Yeah.
Your passion, but, you know.
Yeah, you just have to keep going, And then the flow kind of leads you to what you like. But you have a social media company, And, so what kind of... tell us about what's the most thriving platform in today's time, like...
Ooh, okay. I mean, it depends on your business. Give me your business.
I'm going to give you something very creative, like, somebody in luxury or fashion, and then the other end of the spectrum, like somebody who is in, a very serious steel selling company. It's very two different things, right? Like, one, you need to just speak about the product, because the consumer base is just who really purchases the product. And the other is with luxury and fashion, and there's like a lot of traction and everybody's on it. So which one would you put where and like, what do you think?
Luxury fashion, obviously you do have to have an Instagram, TikTok, and Pinterest. I think a lot of people sleep on Pinterest. Those boards. And so both businesses don't use Pinterest as much as they should, and creators don't use Pinterest as much as they should, because it's got a really good partner program as well. In terms of the steel company, that is so interesting. Definitely think LinkedIn jumped out to me. But I still think there's an angle for TikTok too.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think there's an angle, like the behind the scenes, because I don't even know what goes on behind, like, of actually how it feels for people. Like, it'll be, how this car is created, and then you actually go to the steel factory and you see videos of it being manufactured. Those kind of things get millions and millions of
views. But I'm just curious. Like, I've always imagined TikTok is for, if I may correct myself, somebody from Gen Z to something below that to the millennials.
Yeah.
I mean, most people who are in business, maybe now the millennials are catching up in age, but are a generation above, right? So what's your take on that? Like, is TikTok, do you really believe that TikTok is reaching to an extent where it could reach in terms of like even serious business, like not something to do with like more creative angles, but
definitely I could see it. Obviously, like I said, I'd say LinkedIn was the first one, it was just like an obvious businesses for LinkedIn. But I think there is a space for TikTok as well, like the behind the scenes aspect, because businesses are still run by humans, so people who are in the steel industry, so businesses are run by humans, and obviously TikTok has probably the best algorithm, because they mine so much data. So anyone that works in the steel industry, if they're on the app, would be getting a lot of this content.
Accurate data, and in a more fun way that they don't even need to like apply their mind, collect the data, go online, get these data forms on, but just from them like flipping through TikTok, they actually through get these connectors in a more like relaxed manner. So you would recommend that it's a good growing platform?
I'm not against it, but I'd still say I think primarily LinkedIn's probably the best one for most businesses, and if it's especially B2B, LinkedIn just makes a lot of sense. But it's interesting. I feel like a lot of these, like when it comes to steel or even like waste management, I'd say like real life relationships are more valuable than the socials, because also I looked at the billionaires list, and most people who are billionaires are like yes, obviously the ones that we everyone loves to praise are like the, you know, Tesla and, you know, going to space, paper, you know, all these kind of cool, fun ones, Google. But most billionaire businesses are boring. Roofing companies, steel, waste management.
Yeah.
And I think those are more built on relationships with suppliers and based on relationships rather than just, you know, socials.
Yeah, there is a very modern saying that there is like money in dirt than in Louis Vuitton.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I come from a business background myself, and for us as well as next generation, we're constantly wondering where do we place ourselves. You know, we grew up on Instagram. You know, but not necessarily can I put the business out there. Mm-hmm. But I think it's actually very interesting angle, because when the millennials actually come up to a CEO position, some of them already have.
Mm-hmm.
You're a founder, you know? And I think the wiser platform that I would narrowly choose if I had a free time, you know, would be Instagram versus LinkedIn. Even though I'm a lawyer and I have to use LinkedIn to like publish myself, because I am all I have got. You know, I need to put myself out there. I need to tell them, and then I need to attract the clients. I need to say how much I know. But I think with a product like Steels, like you said, because there's so much that goes behind it, there is cultivable angles behind it, and I do want to just read more texts. I want to see more visuals, and I want to be on an app that I constantly am going, and I want to use it for not just, you know, like addictive, like juicy content, but also like maybe like sometimes like knowledgeable content that we do, because most news that we know of today is from Instagram, believe it or not. I follow the Times, I follow the Economic Times, I follow BBC, and I know what happens to Prince Charles or Kate even before I get a notification from BBC from my Instagram, you know. So yeah, I think that's a very interesting angle. I just wanted to touch maybe one last thing on, you said that Pinterest has a partnership.
Yeah.
And most people don't know this, because for me, for example, I go on Pinterest when I want like inspiration. I don't even see the name on which who has created the board. I just go see the content. And so I think the credibility or the credit aspect of things there is far lesser than I would see a handle in YouTube or Instagram or TikTok.
Because you don't necessarily recognize the creator.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's true. That's interesting as the consumer angle, actually.
Yeah.
But every time you click, it still benefits that creator. Every time you interact and engage.
Okay.
And I think with Pinterest, because that's not exactly my strongest point, I'm not sure how many followers that you'd need. I think something like 20,000 or whatever. But yeah, you would have like a monetization program, the same way you have it with YouTube and TikTok.
Well,
yeah.
And so they are the partner programs, yeah.
Yeah. Also, most of these social media platforms have partner programs just to have monetization. So YouTube is like 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 hours of watch time, and you are earning money for all the views that you get. TikTok is the same thing: 10,000 followers, 100,000 views in the past month, and you're earning money for your content. Facebook is the same. Snapchat does have a partner program, but it's slightly different. And Snapchat's quite cryptic. It's like you have to know the right people with Snapchat. You have to know the right people. You have to have an in with Snapchat to get like a Snapchat show. And if you have a Snapchat show, that means you're again getting pay per views. And then also on Stories and Star, they have like loads of others. I think Snapchat's quite a cryptic one.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So that almost brings us to the end of this conversation. But I'm not going to let you go before I ask this very personal and very, you know, one of my very favorite questions to most of the guests who've been there. Because every time I get a very different answer, and it kind of like opens me up. And I know that whoever has listened, they immediately go and like, you know, kind of read this or like watch it. And they're like, wow, that's definitely interesting. So what's the one book that changed your life? Do you read books?
Yeah, I do read books. There's so many. I know we discussed this yesterday.
And I said, you need to have the one book.
And the first one that came to mind also was fiction, but also can we have two?
Yeah.
One fiction, one non-fiction.
Yeah.
So the fiction one was Picture of Dorian Gray. I read it like 10 years ago, but it still sticks with me.
Yeah.
So obviously he's got this painting and everything. So he made the deal with an artist to say that whenever he's not going to age, and all his aging will go to the painting.
Yeah.
And also all of his bad deeds will go to the painting. So whenever he does something bad, the painting gets more deformed.
Oh, wow.
But he stays young. So essentially all of his, all of his bad deeds go onto the painting. And that's so interesting to me. Like,
yeah.
Because the premise of the fact that you age when you do bad things.
Yeah.
So what, if you keep your innocence, you stay looking young?
Yeah. Now you just killed all the dermatologists in the market. Well, that was very insightful. And
being a person, your skin will stay great.
Yeah. I just want to make sure my face feels good. I popped an acne today. I must have been so bad. But so what's the other one?
And then non-fiction, it's a bit cryptic, but it's called Reality Transurfing. And it's a long book, it's like 700 pages. But it's just the idea that you create your own reality based on what you focus on, which is quite interesting. Like, you could focus on the fact that it's raining right now, or you could focus on the fact that we're actually inside whilst it's raining.
Yeah.
And you have now two completely different experiences.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, it's raining, raining. But then it's like, oh, actually, I'm inside whilst it's raining. That's amazing.
Yeah.
What can I do whilst I'm inside? I can read a book, I can make coffee, I can call a friend, I can journal, I can do all these things because I'm inside with this roof over my head whilst it's cold outside. Imagine being out there.
And so what's your favorite movie, TV show? Well, because I really do would like to have this conversation on this switch personality of thinking, oh yeah, and that's great, but I think then we'll need to have another episode on your thought-provoking process of the psychological aspect of, oh, what could have that been like.
Ooh, all these different realities. Okay, favorite movie, Now You See Me. It's a heist movie, but they're also like magicians.
Yeah.
I thought magic's really cool.
Now You See Me,
yeah. Yeah, it's called Now You See Me.
Okay.
And then TV show, oof. The first one that came to my mind was Prison Break.
Uh-huh.
The main character is just super intelligent.
Yeah.
But then, it's between Prison Break and Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Again, just when the main character is just really intelligent,
it's immediately like a big plus.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you, when the main character. So we have a main character here today, and Lizzie, it was so lovely to speak to you. You have so much strength in you, and that kind of emotes in you in every angle possible. And you also have a very big tinge of intellectual ability. And what you're doing is great for the rugby community, the younger girls. And what you're doing is even greater for the social media aspect of things, being a young entrepreneur and a founder. And I wish nothing but the very best for you. And I hope whoever listening to this will watch rugby or start playing rugby. And follow Lizzie, of course. And hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you for listening and watching.